For an inside look at the state's biggest footy league, it's the Monday Waffle.
Welcome to episode 6 of the Monday Waffle podcast. I'm your host, Mitchell Turner, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kate Massey. Kate, welcome back to another show.
Great to be back in the studio again with you, Mitch. If you've missed last week's episode, jump onto the Monday Waffle Facebook page or search the Monday Waffle on iTunes or Podbean to have a listen.
Now, Kate, AFL footy returned over the weekend. How good was it to have proper footy back?
Oh, it was awesome to have it back, Mitch. It's a shame that our home teams lost, but I mean, then again, my team won, so it's not really...
Geelong supporter yourself, so you're happy, but yeah, WA team's not getting the result, so hopefully they can turn that around. And now just waiting for the Waffle to return. A little bit of waiting left to do, but until then, we'll keep bringing you the content you love.
Right now, though, it's time for some news.
It's time for the Monday Waffle News.
Now, you may have heard that last week there was a document leaked that contained the details of some West Australian Footy Commission staff salaries. We're not going to go into any detail or deep discussion on that matter, but I will say that the WAFC chairman, Wayne Martin, released a statement on Wednesday in regards to the leak. Mr. Martin said that the leak was a deeply regrettable situation and that a full independent investigation is being undertaken on this issue. Mr. Martin also said that the WAFC are working on a short-term strategy to rebuild the game, and that includes adjusting their financial model.
In other news, West Coast Eagles Waffle players Andrew Fisher, Brady Gray and Fraser McInnes have signed to Perth for the season. We spoke to Fraser last week, so if you want to hear more, tune into that episode.
Good afternoon, this is your captain speaking, coming up on the left.
His high ball to half forward is a huge one to win. Gets closed down.
We'll kick virtually on the siren.
Oh, that's your mark of the season so far. Awesome.
We fight one more round. We get knocked down, we get up. We fight one more round.
Come on.
You're listening to the 2020 Waffle Captain Series.
This week is episode 5, and our guest is someone who Mitch has a bit of a crush on. It's Lee Kitchen, the captain of the reigning premiers, Subiaco.
Kitchen with the opener for Subi.
Number one, Lee Kitchen.
Kitchen has dragged it out of the ruck contest and into an open goal.
Subiaco, L. Kitchen, 3 votes.
Thank you for joining us today, Lee. Now, as always, what is your earliest memory of football?
I reckon, Kate, it's probably Auskick. Was just up the road from my house at the high school. And I think visually the first memory of footy is the big McDonald's coolers with that cheap orange juice mix-up that you used to get. So probably that, and wearing a woolen Hawthorn long-sleeve jumper up there and then not being able to get it off afterwards. Pretty wet in Melbourne, so... Most Sundays it was mum or dad was trying to pull that off me, and then followed by a meat pie. I reckon that's probably my earliest memories of footy.
So was it always footy that was your main kind of sporting love when you were growing up? Were there other sports that you were drawn to as well?
In terms of what I played, I loved basketball. But probably the majority of my time in terms of practicing, and it's great from the aspect you can sort of play by yourself basketball, so you don't... kicking in footy, it's normally a bit more fun when you got someone to kick it back to you. But, sort of split my time between playing footy and basketball. And I played a lot of cricket with Dad in the front yard, but I only really played school cricket. Didn't have the time to stand around the field for half a day on Saturday.
I'm glad you mentioned basketball there, because we will circle back to that in a moment. I've got a few little stories about your basketball kind of ventures, so I'll circle back to that. But before I do, we'll stick on the footy path. And you were over east, you said, in Victoria, and you're playing for Frankston before you came out west. How did you kind of come to be at Subiaco?
Yes, I was playing at Frankston. I just finished my third year playing there, and I loved the footy club. It was a tough decision to leave, actually. It was one where you sort of get that sick feeling in your stomach when you're considering what to do. But Jared Schofield gave me a call, and it was probably the season had a little bit of time left to run in it. And I was really happy playing there. Everything was going pretty well for me in Melbourne. Loved the job I had at the time, which was working with Oakley in their head office in Sydney. But around about that same time, the fella who worked in WA, there's only one job with that company in WA, and he decided he wanted to go back to the East Coast. And it just lined up really well. I always wanted to try playing footy in another competition. So I thought, if I don't do it now, yeah, it's probably not going to get that opportunity where both things line up again. And I came over and met with Jared and a couple of the players think it was the Beaufort Street Festival was on the weekend I came over, so that was a nice little treat as well. And yeah, just after listening to Jared speak and seeing the club, it was a pretty exciting opportunity to come over here.
Well, speaking of Jared Schofield, what impact do you think he had on the club?
Oh, he had an incredible impact on the club. I think, it seems to be pretty widely well known, the respect that Jared commands across the group and from just other people and football players. So he's had a huge impact on the culture, I suppose. The culture was there for a long time and as part of when he was playing there as well, but he came in at a time where the club probably wasn't doing too well and turned things around and developed a lot of good footballers and revived a lot of careers at the same time, but also made a lot of good mates and probably taught some people about how to go about achieving things as well.
Why has Subi been so successful in recent years?
I think it probably just comes down to the people that they have or the people that they attract. Really fortunate in it probably is the way they go about getting people back to the club. If people have been there, want to come back, which says a lot about the place. And then in terms of people who are new to the club, they're attracted by what they hear from, I guess, players who are there or players who have been there previously and what they can see about how players develop. But I think it's really just the competitive nature of the players and probably partly just they really enjoy being around the place and around each other. So it's a pretty hard place to leave. I think a few blokes have considered probably going into retirement or trying some other things outside of footy, freeing up a bit more time, but it's definitely a hard place to leave. So that probably is a part of it as well.
And Lee, you just talked about kind of the club being able to attract players from all over the place. And how did the playing group react then when the Waffle, when the WAFC placed restrictions on Subi with their recruiting and things like that? Was it a bit of a kind of shot to the guts?
Yeah, it was an interesting decision. It was a real shot to the guts initially because it really impacted a bloke that was part of our club directly, and that was the likelihood of Zach Clark coming back to Subiaco. So that one was the obvious one to the guys who had played with him. In terms of attracting people immediately, we have a strong playing group, and it's great to have opportunities for other players to come in. So it's not that we just want to attract players from elsewhere, but you just want to be able to be on the same playing field as everybody else and have the same opportunity to continue to improve.
I mean, I guess some of the, when we talk about those restrictions in attracting players, there's people often think of the big name players that maybe came to the club like Zach Clark or, you know, ex-AFL players like your Jordan Lockyers and your Angus Litherlands and players of that nature. But there are obviously a lot of players that weren't getting opportunities at other clubs that you've brought over in the recent years who have really become part of the core, players like Ben Soakland. That is that just another thing of attracting those players through pure opportunity, or is it, do you think, seeing something in them that maybe other clubs haven't seen?
Yeah, I think they're probably individual cases. I think I don't doubt that South Fremantle saw a lot of potential in, say, Ben Sokol, but it's just the nature of their list at the time. They had some really experienced, good key forwards up there. And at the same time, Jared and our head office never really rest on their laurels. They're always looking to improve and looking out, giving players opportunities who they think can develop and see something. And so that's definitely a big part of it. And then those players have to be awarded a lot of the credit as well for getting here and then doing the work. Obviously had the potential and potentially had the potential to perform at that level where they were. But I think most of them would agree that once they got here, their games probably went to the next level. And now they're starting to, I guess, reap the rewards of that.
And Lee, without getting you in too much trouble, how do you feel when you do hear rumours about the club doing, you know, attracting players under the table, doing things untoward? How do you feel about that when it's people from outside the club, you know, making those judgment calls and they haven't really been inside the inner sanctum and seen why you've had that success?
Yeah, that's a funny one. Sometimes I used to probably get offended by it and upset by that sort of chat. And if you ever get sucked into the deep doldrums of comments on Facebook, it's not a good place to be because there's never anything too positive in there. But I guess at the same time, it's probably been one of our strengths, is the fact that I think we've been able to attract players who aren't coming to a club for money, because I think if you were to find out or talk to any of the players who have ended up at Subiaco, they haven't gone to the place because they've been offered the most money. They've had much more lucrative offers elsewhere, and they've chosen to come here for the right reasons, because they want to be a part of something, or they want to challenge their game, or they think it's the best place for them to develop as a footballer and continue to improve. So as long as people keep thinking it's just the money, it gives us a bit of an advantage, really.
We'll lighten this interview up now. Our first question for you. So we're coming out of ISO, but at the club, who would you not want to be stuck in isolation with and why?
Ooh, geez, he's a good mate of mine, but I reckon being stuck in a house with Angus Llewellyn all day would be tiring. he's a creative genius almost. But yeah, I reckon he'd probably wear me out eventually. And then the other house I definitely want to be living in at the moment is the one with Jack Beverley and Aaron Bremen and the Borch boys. That house would be a bit too much for me to take, I think.
Lee, you talked about basketball before, and you're playing a little bit of that when you were younger and coming through. And we did contact a few of the boys to get a bit of dirt on you, so I hope you don't mind. They threw out a few things for us, one of them being that apparently you're horrible with the fishing rod in hand, which is one thing. I know there's a few big fishermen at the club, so you might be able to work out who told me that one. But any truth to you being horrible with the fishing rod in hand?
Look, I only get an invite out once a year on that boat, so I'm thinking it might have something to do with it from Ben. I fancy myself as a bit of a fisherman. Look, I've never been one. Dad and I really only had the canoe growing up, so we targeted the smaller species. But actually going to Exmouth next week for a few days, so we'll see how we go. I'll report back if I've improved at all.
And a few other ones that kind of came through, Lee, was we heard you're a very, very competitive guy. The same guy who gave me the fishing rod insight may have also told me that you're very competitive when it comes to wrestling at the club, and he seemed to think that your win-loss record wasn't really on your side at the moment when it came to one-on-one wrestles with the boys. Any truth to that?
When did you speak to him?
Possibly yesterday.
Yeah, look, I think I'm going to go out there and say I probably lost my first wrestle in history at football training on Tuesday night. I was pretty upset post. I fancy myself out of my weight class, and this fella who I always go against, that I hadn't dropped one to yet, but he got the better of me, and yeah, I didn't take it well, to say the least.
And then the last one on that basketball note was that we've heard you're a very competitive social basketballer, and one of the boys shared with us a story about you playing some pretty hard man-on-man defense on the social basketball court, which may have actually led to a bit of maybe a dust-up or a scuffle with the teammate because you were playing a full-court press.
That's right. Social and sports don't go really well for me at this stage, so I was advocating for a full court press for the whole game, which apparently is not acceptable in domestic basketball, but we were getting it handed to us, to be fair, so we had to change it up. But yeah, Jordan Lockyer sent me one of the longest DMs you'll ever see post that game, explaining his position on the 2-3 zone, so yeah, that's fact as well.
I'm glad we've given you a chance to respond to those rumours. Do you have any pre-game rituals or superstitions?
I don't think so much anymore. I reckon I've mellowed a little bit with that sort of thing. I try and eat a similar sort of meal the night before, and then, I'm pretty easy going on game day. Normally eat chocolate at halftime. That's probably a little treat for halfway through.
That is a different one.
As far as it goes.
Yeah, that's a bit of a different one. I haven't heard that one before, but we'll keep going down a bit of a lighter path, and there's a lot of good young players at Subiaco and had a fair bit of success in the Colts and the Rezzies in recent years. So who are the kind of upcoming young guns at Subiaco that you think we should keep an eye on?
How long we got?
Exactly.
I think the ones that have probably impressed me a lot this pre-season would be the Hickmont brothers. They've made huge, huge leaps, and I reckon we'll see a lot more of them this year. Will in particular, in his running ability and speed, it's gone to another level. So I'm excited to see how that translates to the games. Where to start with the rest of them? I guess our second and third year players coming into, yeah, they're the guys that you expect to really take that next step. So that's probably Mackenzie Lawrence. Well, Borch is already there, but Jack Beverley, these blokes are really now, it's that time where they're probably going to cement themselves in the side or have that opportunity to do that. And then some younger guys like the Clinchers are performing really well. I'm excited to see how Atco performs this year as well. He's probably in the best nick he's ever been in. If you guys are familiar with Jacob Atkinson, he's a pretty impressive unit. And yeah, we've got a lot of new guys, or a lot of young guys that have come up. So Nick Martin's another one who's impressed. He's obviously got that size and mobility that make him a pretty exciting prospect. So see where they all slot in.
And you did talk about a few of the characters earlier, Lee, and a few of your mates, but if we had to interview another Subi player, who would you suggest who'd be very good value for us?
Max Walters would be, if you get Max on the right day, he's probably going to be your most interesting. You've just got to, just get his trust and let him tell you a little bit. It'd be good to hear his thoughts on footy. He's an elite footballer, but he just seems to go about it pretty nonchalant and get the results. But, yeah, I'd probably have a chat with Max, maybe Bev. Jack Beverley is a pretty fun character to have a chat to. Maybe even Aaron Hill. Aaron Hill is probably one who doesn't get the accolades he deserves for being an absolute jet of a footballer. And pretty intelligent man too, so he might give you a bit of a different look at things. Start with those three.
You've been in WA for 5 years now. Where do you consider home?
Oh, that's tough. With your family being all in Melbourne, I think that's always going to be home. Let's say I've had 25 years in Melbourne, I've had 5 years in WA, so the numbers are probably still weighing it towards Victoria. But geez, it's pretty good here. It was only supposed to be a couple of years and it's been five, and it's happened pretty quickly. So I did move into a new place in West Perth. Well, it's an old place, but in West Perth just a few months ago. So that'll make things a little bit tricky as well.
Well, we'll get the hard word on the boys, and they've got a few years left, hopefully, to sway you back towards WA, and hopefully you can consider it home. But Lee, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been a great chat, and really nice to get an insight into your kind of career, into a few things at the Subiaco Football Club that people may not see from outside of the wall. So we really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Mitch. Thanks, Kate. Love the show. That's a bit of fun. Cheers.
That's all we have time for this week. Tune in next week for episode 6 of our Waffle Captain series.
We'll see you then.
If you're loving the Monday Waffle podcast, make sure you head to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Monday Waffle, for more awesome content. And while you're there, give us a like.